the Asian American community is one of the most diverse in the country. In 2023, there were nearly 25 million Asian Americans in the United States, making up about 7% of the population. And that number is up, with Asians being the fastest growing racial and ethnic demographic in the country. But within that, the histories, the lives, the cultures, they stretch across generations and across borders. This is What We Brought, a limited series from Illinois Public Media about the Asian American experience in Central Illinois, told through stories of resilience, adaptation, and identity. I'm your host, Neethi Shastri. In this series, we're diving into the stories about what we carry with us, whether it's memories, food, language, or even the echoes of trauma. You'll hear from Asian American voices of at least 7 different cultures and diasporas, each now calling Central Illinois their home. They'll share their stories, the journeys they took, the things they left behind, and, of course, what they brought with them. Today, we're taking a closer look into a subject that isn't widely taught around the nation, Asian American history. In this episode, we'll sit down with Dr. Yun Pak to take a look back through our history and find out her role in getting it into our Illinois classrooms.
Well, my family immigrated from Seoul, South Korea in 1974. So I've been in the United States for 51 years. And I grew up in a little place just outside of Tacoma, Washington.
Dr. Yun Pak has spent her career trying to fill the cultural gaps missing from higher education. She is currently a professor in the Department of Asian American Studies and the head of the School of Education Policy, Organization, and Leadership at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Her decades of work on the Asian diaspora, including teaching and researching on immigration, cross-racial solidarity, and Asian history, has helped push Illinois to finally include Asian American studies in curriculum, a fight that continues even today.
You know, the great thing about the kind of training that I received in my graduate program and how we teach in the department in particular is what we call a social foundations approach. In terms of, we look at the political economy, we look at the historical, political, sociological factors of what does it mean to be not only in this moment, but connecting it historically. It also means that we don't study groups in isolation, right? So it's to say when we study Asian American history, for example, it's how is it in relation to so many other racialized, minoritized groups. So this is also a way in which the important part of some of the professional development modules that we've created as a team as part of the teaching of equitable Asian American community history, the TEACH Act that Illinois was the first in the nation to pass. But the contents of the TEACH modules really coming from a course that I've been teaching on campus for over 25 years. So who would have thought, right, some 25 years ago, that it would end up being important content.
But Dr. Pak's advocacy and her drive to conduct research that collects crucial information about the Asian American community actually stems from her own personal experiences. Dr. Pak's story begins in the wake of the Korean War, a conflict between the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, currently North Korea, and the Republic of Korea, current South Korea. This war emerged post-Japanese colonization of Korea and directly out of the end of World War II. More than 2 million people lost their lives during this conflict. While the fighting ended in 1953, the new countries of North and South Korea never officially brought the war to an end. The front line of the conflict has become the de facto boundary between the two countries ever since. And so, coming right out of the Korean War, Dr. Pak's parents had a hard decision to make: to stay in the aftermath or leave. Dr. Pak told me it's this very history that she and her family brought to the United States and that she's ended up carrying throughout her life.
It's A lot of it from my mother's side, because she grew up originally in what's called North Korea. So that's where her family is from. And I grew up hearing so many stories from not only my mom, but from my grandma about their times in North Korea, but also growing up under Japanese colonialism. So it was just these dual efforts of early on, they developed a sense of Korean identity that was strong. What does it mean to be free in these moments? But it was those stories about their survival, the things that they had to endure during the war, especially my mom's side of the family, having to travel by foot from North Korea to the 38th parallel towards freedom, what they call freedom. And certainly thinking about that, as well as my dad, in terms of growing up in the southern part of South Korea and growing up with really harsh conditions in terms of not a lot of family support and love. And so it was these moments that I think about often, and I probably would say think about more being a parent, and what would it mean for me to escape war with young kids in tow. Of course, my kids are older, but just thinking about how old my mom was at the time, she would be an adolescent around middle school age, and taking care of babies within her own families. And so I think about those stories, the babies that didn't survive because of malnutrition, just how do babies survive in these moments? So those stories have really carried with me for many years, to this day, obviously. And one of the reasons why my family in particular wanted to immigrate to the United States, I remember my mom telling me, she said she always in the back of her mind was afraid that another war would ensue. And when my mom and dad were living in Seoul, they always had a bag packed to go just in case, to be prepared, because the way that she as a child and her family were totally unprepared for what was about to happen. So just as a child being traumatized by event and realizing we need to be ready at every moment. And she reflected that she didn't want to live that way anymore. And so I have a feeling most likely that my aunt, who was married to an American GI living in Tacoma, Washington, sponsored my family. So I suspect it would have been part of the 1965 Family Reunification Act, where my family were able to benefit from that immigration act.
Dr. Park's family was one of many post-war Korean immigrants who found a new home in the United States. And they were joined by other Korean immigrants. Some were skilled laborers and professionals. Others were Korean adoptees. Systemic international adoption from Asian and other countries to the United States actually stems directly from the post-war Korea period, where children of both mixed-race ancestry and full Korean ancestry were adopted in large numbers to Western countries. According to South Korea's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, many adoption firms post-Korean War had registered babies as orphans, when, in fact, they weren't. This was something that both the Korean and American governments turned a blind eye to. But after years of advocacy from adoptees, Korea has officially formally apologized for its mishandling of adoptees in 2025.
I saw a recent documentary on PBS, and it was just so incredibly heartbreaking on so many levels. And they were talking about the time period and the kinds of kids that they would literally take off the street. And I was horrified, because there was a time when I was about 4 years old, I was lost. I was hanging out with friends, and they said, well, you know how to get back home, right? And I said, oh, sure. But of course I didn't. And so I thought I could find my way, but I was totally lost. And it was probably not even that far from where we were living. But to me as a young child, it just seemed like another world away. And the stories that I saw in the documentary also talked about literally picking up kids who were lost in their neighborhoods. And it was that split second thinking, oh my gosh, like that could have been me as well. And so it was, and it's not to say it's about me, but it's to say how common was this, that a child just happened to be lost, and the way that they were questioning kids would have ended up in places of these adoption centers and having no way to know how to get back to your parents. So that's been an incredible story that I'm glad to see that coming to fore.
Bringing important history to the forefront is something Dr. Park is really familiar with. Her work is founded in historical, political, and sociological factors. This means that her research on the Asian American community doesn't exist in a bubble. It considers the various pieces, the state of our home countries, our relations with other racial minorities in the United States, our histories, and so much more. It all contributes to her recountings of who we are and what we've brought to this country.
It's always to say that it's important to see the world in that thematic sense. So, for example, in terms of citizenship, in terms of immigration, we see that it's not only an Asian American issue or an Asian issue, but how do different groups come to be constrained or excluded from immigration laws, but also where Asian Americans featured centrally in that. What about citizenship and citizenship rights? How does it extend to something like the 1790 Naturalization Act, which forbade non-whites from gaining citizenship? It was also about how enslaved Africans were viewed. So when we think through history based on these topics in a more relational way, we realize that we have to talk about everybody. And yes, it may be through Asian American history, but let's really dig deeper in terms of that. That to me is so incredible and important, and that we can't exist outside of being with each other.
The history surrounding people of color in the United States is not a kind one. There were laws put into place to negatively affect every population that wasn't white, like the Naturalization Act of 1790 that Dr. Pak just mentioned. This law set the first uniform rules for the granting of United States citizenship by naturalization. The law limited naturalization to, quote-unquote, free white persons of good character. Then there were other laws that targeted Asian communities in particular, like the executive orders by Franklin D. Roosevelt during World War II that put Japanese citizens and migrants alike in concentration camps on American soil. This act led to the creation of the U.S. Border Patrol. Yep, the same U.S. Border Patrol we go through in customs today. Since its creation, we've seen all kinds of immigrants come through, some entering as refugees from places like Laos and Cambodia. We've seen it used politically, like for the brain drain, where in the 80s and 90s, the best professionals, such as doctors, lawyers, and engineers, were given visas to bring their labor to the United States instead of keeping it in their home countries. And we've seen hostility toward our people as well, such as during the Muslim ban in the last Trump administration. And so, it's all kind of connected. We see the remnants of these acts turning into the immigration system we now have, the ones we interact with all of the time. And yet, we were also here before then. After all, it was the early Filipino immigrants who helped strengthen the U.S. fishing industry in the late 1700s. When Americans wanted a transcontinental railroad, it was the Chinese Americans and laborers who essentially built the entire western half. And it was Indian Punjabi farmers in the 1800s and 1900s that helped turn California into the agricultural hub that it is today, with established generational farms that we still use for our agricultural production. This is why, in some part, it's so crucial to have data and research on Asian Americans in this country, and for our history to be shared and taught. Naturally, through all this history, we've had to build resilience. And it's a trait that Dr. Pak says we've always exhibited and even still inherit today. This long, untaught history of bias against the Asian community in the United States and barring certain access to the rights of other citizens is partly what led Dr. Pak to help form the Teaching Equitable Asian American Community History, or the TEACH Act, here in Illinois. Dr. Pak explained more about what this really means for our community.
So the TEACH Act, which stands for the Teaching of Equitable Asian American Community History, the legislation is very short. and it calls for one unit of teaching Asian American history. Well, that one unit can be interpreted in very different ways. And we also understand that based on looking at the history of multicultural education in the United States from the late 60s to the 70s, we definitely do not want this to be a food fun festival aspect of it. But how do we understand it deeply? How do we think critically? And how do we understand it relationally, as I've been saying? And this is why we built the modules in the way that we have, to look at U.S. history through Asian Americans from thematic approaches like citizenship and immigration and education and school segregation. I teach mainly right now in our online doctoral courses. So there's courses on Introduction to Diversity and Equity. I also have taught, as I mentioned, Asian American education for primarily our undergraduate students on campus. And it's just been a very rewarding experience. And actually, the ways that I've shifted the course contents is really by the students telling me they'd like to see more of this, they'd like to see more of that. So I find it to be a very important dialogical space. The TEACH Act itself is obviously, I benefit from the hard work of people who came through the Asian Caucus, through the Illinois State Legislature, being introduced by a colleague of mine, Dr. Oyan Poon, who knew people like Josina Merida and Venu Gupta, and we had a conversation, and they liked what Illinois wanted to do by developing professional development modules for the TEACH Act, understanding that we had been developing these things all along. So I had been working with Dr. Sharon Lee, who also helped develop so many of the module components for the TEACH Act. And with that, and being introduced then to the Asian American Foundation, who are able to provide the grant project for us to do this, it's been an incredible journey that I feel very privileged to be a part of. So it's really thanks in part to the community members, our other K-12 educators and students who understood the importance of what the TEACH Act would do for not just Illinois, but really nationally.
Going off of this topic, what does resilience in your perspective look like for our Asian American community? You know, I didn't really grow up with too much information about Asian Americans. I really, really had to learn it once I got here. Mm-hmm. Like our ancestors surviving colonization, war, things like that, to the history of Asian America that, you know, so many of us don't unfortunately know, and which is part of why we have things now like the TEACH Act. So I guess, like, how does this theme of resilience, do you feel, play out for our community?
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly it depends on how we want to think about and think through resilience. So there's the one piece of it, which you do mention. And actually, I was just having lunch and conversation with my college age kid and asking them about, how do you define resilience? Because I also like to learn from what young people have. And the idea of relational understanding of our history is an important piece of it, because one of the things that I also reinforce students in my classroom, and especially in these moments when they're feeling incredibly down, and especially when their work is DEI-centered, how do they exist in this moment? And I tell them and remind them, you know, we are in this historical moment that unfortunately is part of a larger pattern. And we're doing a disservice to our ancestors who fought so hard for us to be here. So on the one hand, I understand what you're feeling right now. On the other hand, we can't be wallowing in this moment because so many people have fought hard and who did not live to see a lot of these things come into play. So I feel that sense of responsibility, and we should all feel accountable for that, right? We're here for a purpose. Let our purpose be in maintaining that level of